Welcome to the Spotlight Edition of the Future of Medicine podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Craig Wright. Join me as I have conversations with fascinating medical experts as we discuss a variety of compelling topics. We aim to not only inform you, but to empower you, instilling confidence along your journey toward optimal health. This podcast is brought to you by Brentwood MD. Located just south of Nashville, Tennessee, Brentwood MD provides best-in-class concierge primary care. To learn more about our innovative approach to primary care, visit our website at brentwoodmd.com. On this Spotlight Edition, Dr. Tiffany Watson, known to many as Dr. Tiff, joins me to discuss performance nutrition. She's an expert with over 25 years of experience helping high-achieving individuals optimize their health, energy, and body composition. She holds a PhD in health and human performance and is a certified strength and conditioning specialist, fitness nutrition specialist, as well as an intuitive eating counselor. Dr. Tiff is the nutrition director with Empower Physical Therapy here in Nashville, Tennessee. She works with clients both in person as well as virtually all over the country to develop a science-backed and a sustainable strategy toward improved personal performance. We hope you enjoy. Well, Dr. Tiff, thanks so much for joining me on our Spotlight Edition for our podcast. I am so excited, as we were just talking off camera, about talking to you about thinking through our nutrition as really a part of our comprehensive health plan. You know, I think of our listeners as they're listening to this, they either just ate or they're thinking about their next meal.
Always.
And so there is nothing really more important in one's daily rhythm than thinking about how they're fueling their body. So as we dive in, give me a little bit of your background of how you got into this particular space in performance nutrition.
Absolutely. First of all, thank you for having me on. Yeah. Super excited to chat and be a part of your podcast. I started my athletic career so young. I mean, I was playing t-ball at 6 and soccer at 8, you know, so athletics and activity and fitness has always been a part of my life. And as I started to explore career paths, I knew I wanted to stay involved in sport and performance at some level.
Yeah.
Initially, I thought sports medicine, which is ironic because I now work out of a sports medicine facility, but ended up going the psychology route, pursued my master's in sports psychology. Mm-hmm. So my early career was more corporate wellness, executive performance, the mental aspect of sport. Mm-hmm. So I was working more on the mental performance side of things. But what I noticed so quickly, the correlation between our mental performance and how we're fueling.
Yeah.
Right? If we're depleted, if we're not sleeping, if we're run down, if we're burnout, all that comes back at some level to how we're nourishing, how we're putting nutrition in our body, hydration. So over the course of my time in sports psych, I kind of started shifting a bit more into the physical performance realm, which has been really cool to have those opportunities to bring the mental and the physical together now.
Yeah.
So all my clients that I work with, you can imagine, like you were saying, there's so much of a mind game around food.
Yeah.
You know, thinking about it, the noise, the decision making, all the things that go along with that. So I still do a lot of mental performance work, I feel like.
Yeah.
Although the last 20 years of my career has been more focused on the fitness and nutrition piece of performance.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. And I love that term, kind of performance nutrition, because performance, you know, if you really think about it, it's like, well, what stage are we on? You know, we may be an athlete and you may be on an athletic field or an athletic stage, but you may also be an entrepreneur and your brain and your creativity are your performance. Or you may be a parent.
That's right.
And your energy is your performance stage to be there for your kids and your spouse. And so no matter who's listening to this, performance nutrition is super crucial to them. I think you coined a term in the past that fuel, sweat, and science.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about what that means to you and how that influences your mentality and your work with patients.
This is the formula for peak performance in my mind. Your fuel is what you consume.
Yeah.
The energy on the base level, the calories that you consume, but also the information, the community, the music, the news you're watching, all the energy that's coming in is the fuel.
Yeah.
Right. And then the sweat is the energy going out.
Mm.
So again, foundationally, exercise, physical movement, but also the investment you're making, the exposure to discomfort, the stress that creates adaptation, the sweat equity. So you've got the fuel, the energy coming in, the sweat, the energy coming out, and all that needs to be rooted in science. Are you following methodologies that are backed by science and research long-term, not these little quick snippets of information that now we're seeing on the social medias and the things where people are pulling one piece of science and calling it truth? Right. But I believe if you have that perfect formula of the right energy coming in, the right energy going out backed by science, then that's peak performance.
How do you begin to work with individuals when they come to see you, and how do you get them to think about that fuel aspect? You know, when I work with members, I often will pose the question of what are we training for? You know, what's our performance? What's our stage? And we have to inform our nutritional plans based on how we're going to have that sweat and have that output. So how do you get started with someone? What do you encourage them to think about?
Initially is a lot of deep dive goal discussion, like you said. Like, what do you want out of this? Is it changing body composition? Is it just feeling better? Is it sleep management? Is it, you know, evaluating health markers and trying to drive cholesterol levels down, or hypertension, or diabetes? So a lot of data collection on the front end about what they're trying to get out of this. For some people, it's just aesthetic. Like, I just want to fit in my clothes. Right? I just want to get back in my suit. So depending on what they want. And then we talk a lot about the cadence of their lifestyle. What's doable? You know, what are the non-negotiables? What are the sacrifices you're willing to make? What are the things you can't change? So that I set a plan up that is sustainable and that works with their lifestyle. There's always an ideal, you know, over here. But if that's not something somebody can handle right now, whether the season they're in or because of priorities or because of commitments, then it's setting them up for failure. So first off is just building some understanding of goals, and then doing a little data collection too on health history and intake, you know, dietary intake. What are they eating now? What do their labs look like, if there's anything of note? And then we kind of build from there.
I love that. Well, it kind of goes without saying, in our culture, and this isn't unique to social media, this isn't unique to the internet, but just the noise and the options that people are posed, the promises people are given from certain nutritional strategies. There's so much out there, and everything sounds like it'll work for everybody. And I always think about it as a realist that, you know, each of these plans work for someone. It may not work for every individual. And so it is truly where you have to think about one's own body. But as we think about how a patient can think about their nutrition differently, you and I were talking off camera about macros and some big information that informs all of those other strategies. You know, if you can't count your macros, you don't really know what keto looks like, or you don't know what a low-fat diet looks like. And so walk me through how you coach individuals to think about macros as you begin working with them.
People are a little afraid, right? Because, again, social media or friends or people that have done it before may have followed a different approach. And macros, with it comes this feeling of, I have to obsess over the numbers and I have to monitor every ounce of everything that goes in my body. Certainly, that's not the long-term goal for anyone. But I do believe in the beginning, everyone needs to spend some time geeking out on the numbers a little bit. You know, using their kitchen as a laboratory, weighing things, measuring things, assessing portions. It's very hard to be intuitive, which is where we all eventually want to graduate to, just intuitively being able to nourish our body and give it what it needs. You can't be intuitive until you understand what your body needs. So the beginning of that journey has to look like macros, in my opinion. To understand what is a portion of protein appropriate for my goals, my training, my body composition, my health history, what is an appropriate amount of calories in a day for the type of exercise that I'm doing, for the body composition goals I have, for the stress and demand of my life. What about carbohydrate intake and fiber? How much of that do I need? How much is too much? You know, there's so much nuance around that. And to your point, if you just try to follow a plan your girlfriend's doing, or your buddy's doing, or your mom's doing, it's unlikely to work as well for you because your body's different, your history's different, your lifestyle may be different. And that's where just customizing it. But that foundation of macros allows you to plug into any number of approaches once you understand nutrition on a base level.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And just to bring that back for people listening, macros being carbohydrate, fat, and protein, right? Because some people, I know we all kind of think everybody knows what that is, but I've found, I've talked over the years to people, and they're like, well, what is a macro?
I was just about to ask
carbohydrates, fat, and protein are the three macronutrients that make up most food sources. And then, of course, all foods have micronutrients, which are your vitamins, your minerals, the more minute aspects of the calories.
So. Great. And do you have, for the general population, some general goals or balance for the macros? Or is that something that is truly individual based on someone's goals and based on their starting point?
It is hard to generalize that. I would say that 80% of clients I work with do pretty well on a 40-30-30 breakdown. Mm-hmm. So that's 40% carbs, 30% fat, 30% protein.
Yeah.
So that tends to work well. That's kind of the old zone diet breakdown. Of course, if you've got somebody that has a little bit more of a pre-diabetic predisposure, you might come down on the carbs a little bit, right? Somebody that maybe has some kidney disease history might come down on the protein a little bit. So again, you kind of nuance within that based on somebody's history and their goals. If somebody has great muscle mass and they're just trying to maintain, you could even come down on the protein a little bit versus somebody trying to build muscle, right? You might ratchet the protein percentage up a little and come down on fat or carbohydrates. So there's a little bit of science around that and a little art to it.
Yeah.
Just for me, having done this for so many years, I can kind of look at someone's body type. I can look at their, you know, preferences when I look at their food journals and the types of foods they choose, setting them up for if somebody tends to like higher fat protein sources like red meats or salmons or nuts or avocados from a carb perspective, they might do better on a higher fat protein and less carb. Yeah. But somebody that's craving, you know, the fruits and the veg and the grains and doing more endurance work, they may need a little more carbohydrate. So
I love that. So a 40-30-30 balance is, I kind of think of it as a balance. Like maybe that's a good starting point. And then with someone's goals and lifestyle and maybe some biomarkers, you add some to others, drop in others.
That's right.
Obviously you keep that 100% and you just kind of tweak from that being a starting point.
That's right.
When speaking of biomarkers and labs, when you're working with someone, are there specific numbers that you look at on a lab report or ask for from a patient that are really informative to you with initially that strategy you're building?
Only if someone's in kind of that perimenopausal, andropause age bracket, I might want to see hormone levels. I might like to see cortisol levels as being one of those hormones. Anybody that comes in and says, hey, I had some alarming numbers, right? High cholesterol, hypertension, pre-diabetic markers, those would all inform, again, maybe how I set their macro profile and distribution up. But I try not to overwhelm. To me, we've got to just start building a foundation of habits and start chipping away at things. And oftentimes, if we start bringing in all that noise, then it takes away from just eating quality foods, eating in balance, being consistent, moving your body.
Yeah.
You know, but I definitely do body composition assessment on all my clients to start. So we are looking at muscle mass, body fat percentages, hydration, visceral fat levels, basal metabolic rate. Mm-hmm. So those numbers are certainly the baseline for me, as well as kind of what they're currently eating.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, and great transition there, because I think for many individuals that I work with here at Brentwood MD, you have the challenge of midlife, that perimenopause or andropause for gentlemen, that transition. Talk to me a little bit about what happens during those hormone changes of classically midlife.
Yeah.
And how that might encourage someone to change a nutritional plan.
The most relevant shift that happens is our sex hormones, right? So our estrogen, our testosterone for men and women, but mostly the estrogen downregulation, the testosterone, and those two hormones drive lean mass, how we build lean mass, how we maintain lean mass, and then of course how we store body fat on the flip side of that. So that's the biggest change people see. And often you'll hear people even say, I'm not eating different. I'm not training differently, but my body looks different. It's just the redistribution of fat. And typically that's because we've lost muscle and it's not even noticeable sometimes. You may not physically see yourself losing muscle, but over the course of even 7-10 years in perimenopause, you're slowly seeing some downregulation of those hormones and thus the muscle mass. And guess what muscle does? It drives our metabolism. So then your metabolism is slowly downregulating along with that loss of lean mass. And so we see people thinking, well, now I have to eat less and less and less to find that calorie deficit. So what unfortunately happens is because people don't catch it and aren't preventative about it, then we end up trying to build muscle and do all those things at 45, 55, 65 years old. If people would start in their 20s and 30s building a foundation of muscle. Not to say you can't build muscle in those years. I believe you can build muscle at any age. But it's much easier when everything's optimized and our performance levels and our sleep and our commitments are much less. And if we would help teach our younger generations to set themselves up for success and have that nice layer of lean tissue on their body going into perimenopause and andropause, it would be, I believe it would offset some of the decline.
You know?
Because at 60 years old, you come in, you've never weight trained, you've never really focused on that, you've not thought about protein intake, you've not really had any education around that. That's a much harder change to make at that stage. You know, and that's when you start to notice it. Unfortunately, so.
Well, and I think that's a great point to make where in general, it's much easier to maintain something that's in good shape than it is to create something. And so you do have that kind of sweet spot of life. Let's just call it the 40s, you know, for men and women, both with some nuances there, where the challenges are great. Often maybe young kids at home, profession maybe going up and to the right, requiring a lot of attention. And so it's so easy to lose track of those good behaviors in your 20s and 30s when you can naturally get away with it sometimes. But I hear so often, like a quote you just mentioned before, so many men and ladies both, they'll come to me in their mid-40s and they'll say, you know, I used to be able to shed 5 pounds just by eating different or by exercising, but I can't anymore. And it's they obviously come into the room with a lot of depression around that. It's like, oh, something's changing. Maybe I'm behind the eight ball now. And I'm already in these hormonal changes. How can I paddle upstream? And I think the point of getting ahead of it is so crucial. So in your 20s and 30s, create that foundation and then maintain it.
That's right. And we can't forget cortisol levels as well. We just don't handle stress as well in those perimenopause and menopausal shifts. So when we expose our body to stress like alcohol and high intensity exercise and dieting, calorie deficit is stress on the body. And we notice we don't recover as well from workouts. We're not sleeping as well. So we are struggling with all the recovery elements and causing more stress by trying to over-exercise and under-eat and get this weight off. And then we're stressed, emotionally stressed about the excess weight. And the cortisol levels are just through the roof as well. So not just the reproductive hormones, but the cortisol hormone is also kind of in high alert in those years too. So if we can find ways to better manage that element, stress particularly, it can make a huge difference.
Great point. There's a lot of things kind of converge to be complicating to one's health there in midlife and in one's 40s. So going back to the thought of performance nutrition, kind of that partnership of how are you fueling your body and then how are you outputting that energy? Where do you see that camaraderie between those two really misaligned for some individuals where they may be giving themselves maybe the improper fuel for what their performance is going to be?
most people don't understand that to build muscle, you have to have a calorie surplus, mm-hmm. right? It's like feeding a plant.
Yeah.
Right? You've got this little seed of cells and you've got to feed it energy for it to grow. And a lot of people, when they go into a new training program or they're doing, you know, any kind of exercise regimen and they want to build muscle, they're also trying to diet at the same time. Mm-hmm. So then they're wondering why they're not seeing muscle growth. And I want to be very clear that strength and muscle mass gain are different.
Yeah.
So you can get stronger. People say, well, I know I'm getting stronger. I'm doing higher weight. I'm doing more reps. I'm, you know, doing more volume. Absolutely. You're going to see progress. You're going to see some adaptation through consistent strength training. But if you're talking about truly building new muscle to build metabolism and have more resilience and have that increased opportunity, mm-hmm. in, you know, from a nutritional standpoint to eat more calories and burn more calories, you might have to gain some weight.
Yeah.
And there's a very misinformed, and that could be, again, social media, misinformation, whatever, but people think they can just eat protein and do moderate level strength training and that they're actually going to grow muscle. And there has to be a much more strategic plan around that process. Yeah. Building new muscle is very difficult.
Yeah. And well, and going back to that balance we talked about earlier. So when somebody may want to build muscle mass, when they look at their macros, do they just focus on increasing the protein? Or how does that look for getting that calorie surplus? Is it going to be straight protein or is it going to be a mix of
It should be a mix. Protein's priority, right? Especially post. But again, I think there's a misunderstanding that protein is an energy source.
Yeah.
Right? Protein provides us very little energy for physical activity. It's the carbs and the fat that fuel the training. Mm-hmm. So you need just excess energy. And that could come from carbs, could come from fat, could come from protein. But certainly you want to make sure you get your minimum protein needs met because that's going to be the rebuilding, the recovery, the muscle protein synthesis component of, right? Meaning new muscle being developed. So the protein is needs to be there at minimum, but you can get into that surplus through any of the macronutrients.
Great, great. I see, you know, the current situation we're in culturally, there's such a shift to protein being the thing people talk about.
That drives me crazy.
And when I want, thank you for mentioning that because I think you have to consider the whole. You know, you can't really get tunnel vision into one macro and let that be your source. That you really have to think about, well, what's best for what my goals are.
That's right.
And I may need to fuel the activity with some carbs and fat. That then, with the protein as the foundation, I'm going to build and I'm going to recover really well.
That's right.
And so it's really a thoughtful plan, which I think a lot of people I find miss. Is they feel like they're just kind of piecemealing their diet together. Mm-hmm. And then they're trying to do some exercise. And you know, classically, you know, diet and exercise, that's just, you know, the way to better health and to better body composition. But there's so much more detail.
There's a lot more detail. And not to say those aren't great habits to start.
Yeah.
You know, like don't want to dismiss the benefit of just moving your body and trying to be mindful of what you're eating and getting fruits and veg and making sure you're giving, you know, your body the energy that it needs. But if you're truly trying to manipulate the composition of your body, that's a science problem.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just basic habits usually.
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, and as you think about working with individuals at the beginning, and I know we're speaking to a general audience and we, with that, we lose some of that individualization. Mm-hmm. But if you're starting to work with somebody, let's just pretend maybe their goal is to optimize their body composition and specifically to lose some body fat. Where do you start when you're kind of working through that process? Do you start with nutrition? Do you start with the fitness? Do you talk about both at the same time?
I tend to ask what they're currently doing for fitness. And if they've got a good routine going and they feel good about it and it's doable and they're consistent with it, I don't touch it. Yeah. I just change and match the food to go with the level of expenditure and volume that they're doing. Mm-hmm. End of day, to lose body fat, we have to find a calorie deficit. So if this is how much I know they're expending, then I can give them a nutritional protocol that's going to create a deficit from that expenditure. Now, if they're not moving at all, I certainly nudge them to try to start moving. But I tend to start with the nutrition piece first, get that foundation built. And then as they feel ready, if nothing else, just start walking. Can we get X number of steps a day? Can we go get in the pool for 30 minutes? Can we, you know, whatever they feel like they can manage. And then if that starts increasing over time, then the food might change.
Yeah.
Right. Because if expenditure increases, food increases potentially. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we definitely start with the nutrition piece from my philosophy.
I like that. Well, and I think it's important too to point out that I love how you start with, you know, hey, what's going good? You know, what are you already doing that you may feel good about? Because I think some people encounter these type of conversations with such despair that they feel like everything needs to change. Mm. You know, if I'm doing zone two fitness, I need to do high intensity training. Or if I'm doing keto, I now need to do, you know, a different balance.
Yeah.
And so they just feel like they have to totally change things where they may just, you know, continue doing the things that they enjoy and are serving them well, but just think about another area a little bit differently.
Yeah. And just, like you said, fill gaps, you know, okay, that's great. We definitely need to bring some strength training in, but if that feels overwhelming right now, or it's a time barrier or whatever, that's fine, but that's something we need to leave on the table. If this is your goal to build muscle, there has to be strength training there. So we can't ignore that. There has to be a certain stimulus to create the body that you want, if that's what you tell me that you want. So
I may ask the obvious question here, that as listeners have listened to the conversation, you know, we talked about muscle, building muscle, it's going to be a calorie surplus. Mm-hmm. Then if we want to lose fat, a calorie deficit. How do people balance, maybe when their goal is both? Mm. They want to build some muscle, but they also need to lose some fat.
Yeah.
How should they think about that without feeling like they're taking one step forward and then one step back?
We look at that body composition first. If the muscle mass is really on the low end of the spectrum, I tend to push people to try to build that first because it's going to make losing the fat easier. If they can build a better foundation of muscle initially, then getting that body fat off is going to be easier.
Yeah.
If somebody has a good, solid foundation, they've been an athlete over the years, or they've done a good job strength training, and they have a good amount of muscle, maybe it's just not exactly where they want it to be, then let's start getting the body fat in a little bit more of a leaner place and then come back. So when you do build, you're risking gaining some body fat along with it. Yeah. It's very hard to just, I mean, I wish I was that good.
Oh, yeah.
When I try to go, you're going to gain a little bit of everything when you're in a surplus. We try to manage that ratio, but you're going to build a little of everything most likely. So if somebody's already on a really high body fat percent spectrum, I try to be thoughtful of not letting them overshoot that even more. Mm-hmm. Get the body fat down a little bit leaner before we try to put some weight on or some muscle on. Good. So the body fat informs that decision a lot of times. And then sometimes people just have a priority. They're like, I don't care. I just want to lose the fat.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
We'll just preserve as much muscle as we can.
I like that. You know? Well, and I love your thought and the point you made there of, you know, really building the muscle as a way to achieve both goals. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, start with the muscle. Let's restore that. That'll actually make the burning of the fat easier when there's a higher lean body mass. So.
And there are cases where you can do both at the same time. I'm not saying it's impossible. It's just more difficult. If somebody is a total novice at strength training, those are the cases where I often see them build some muscle and lose fat at the same time because they have that initial adaptation phase. If somebody's already been strength training for many years, it's much harder to see those two metrics move at the same time.
Yeah. As you're working with somebody, I want to kind of finish this aspect of our conversation focusing on a couple of areas. But the first is, when you're working with someone, do you have any non-negotiables? You know, things that you say, hey, really with any worthy goal of improving their health, this or that doesn't align with that process. And I don't want to ask a leading question, but I'm thinking about, you know, eating late at night, alcohol, some things that may easily creep into someone's routine that you have to kind of tell them like, hey, don't forget this is important.
Yeah.
Do you have any of those things that you found with your clients that you focus on?
The only thing I never want someone to do is start a habit they can't stick with. So if somebody tells me they travel a lot for work, they're super social, they do a lot of fundraising events and wine and dine and get clients and investors, mm-hmm. and I tell them to cut alcohol, it's not going to work for them.
Yeah.
Do I educate them on the detrimental aspects of alcohol consumption and makes this progress a lot slower and it is more difficult and it affects sleep and all the things? Mm-hmm. I'm never going to not educate. But I want to help somebody build a sustainable plan. So the only thing I always ask people when they say, I'm going to cut dessert or I'm going to cut alcohol or I'm going to stop eating gluten or I say, is that something you want to do forever? Like, are you really committed to this just being part of your new lifestyle? I'm like, well, no, but I could do it for 12 weeks.
Yeah.
I said, well, then why? Let's just figure out how to moderate it.
Yes.
Or modify it.
Yeah.
And make it work for us.
Oh, I love that. I know I can even speak to my own health plan where sometimes that avoidance and elimination for a season, sometimes it can really be useful, but oftentimes that's the reason you fall off the wagon.
That's right.
Is you chose something that you really needed to moderate, mm-hmm. not eliminate.
There's a real health risk. You know, if somebody came into me and they were having, you know, some real health concerns or their doctor had prioritize this, I might say, we got to sacrifice this for a while. You know, we got to go super aggressive. We've got to cut the booze or we've got to stop doing the refined sugars or, you know, whatever the case may be. So unless I saw something on labs or a doctor's suggestion that we do this track, you know, that would be the only time I might say this is non-negotiable right now. Yeah.
Makes sense. Well, and as we think about kind of ways to make it practical for someone and sustainable, are there any recommendations that you make that may be kind of low-hanging fruit for people as far as changes to their environment or changes to their routine that you feel like are kind of easy initial suggestions to get them moving in the right direction?
Work, home, social, and like you said, I think the alcohol is one of those aspects of that world, you know. For a lot of my clients, if they don't have it in the house, if they only drink socially, if they limit it to weekends, you know, those are little ways. Same with any trigger.
Yeah.
Right. Taking it out of the house, making it something you have to go get, like desserts.
Yeah.
You know, if that for you, you know, you can't moderate the Ben and Jerry's right now, then don't have it in the house and know, hey, if we're out on a weekend and we go to dinner and we want to grab a little ice cream after, it's still going to be less frequent and less often and less volume than if you had it in the house.
Yeah.
So would just evaluate your triggers and think, is there anything that I'm exposed to consistently that I'm just not able to manage right now? Mm. And those little tweaks can often make a big difference.
Yeah, I love that one. It seems so simple, but it is so useful. Just controlling our access. You know, I have two young kids, a 12-year-old and a 10-year-old. And, you know, some of the frustrations I have as a parent sometimes is trying to teach them how to think about their bodies and think about their health in a very appropriate way. Mm. And then I walk into our pantry and you think, wow, I've given them access to gas station worth of candy or sweets. Yes. And it's like, well, you know, controlling the access is crucial. And even teaching at a young age, but then I run into that own challenge myself where, you know, if I desire something, but I don't have it, chances are I'll get distracted or move into something else. And that initial desire, that initial trigger will kind of wane.
Yeah.
And if I just don't have access to it, it helps me control it better.
But also not overly restricting. I believe restriction leads to excess.
Yeah.
And so like you mentioned the kiddos, and I've seen that backfire where there's nothing in the house. There's never treats. There's never some fun foods that they can just enjoy without it being, you know, part of their, you know, balanced plate or whatever. Yeah. Then when they do have it at a holiday or they have it at a friend's house, they tend to overdo it. And adults are no different.
You're right. You're right. So I think, that overcorrection.
Just giving yourself permission, but understanding and doing it consciously is the goal.
Love it. Love it. Well, Dr. Tiff, thanks again for joining me for this episode. So much depth here. And even though we talk about things kind of generally that are truly individual and personal, I think this has given us just a good foundation for how anyone can think about their performance and their nutrition in a way that really matches. So thanks for your expertise and sharing it with us today.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to this conversation. I truly hope you found it useful. You can find out more about today's episode and discover additional resources at BrentwoodMD.com. Be sure to check out all of our other content that we've created by searching BrentwoodMD on LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. If our content has provided you with value, it would mean the world to us if you subscribed to the show and left a review. This helps us ensure that more people, just like you, can find our content so that they can begin optimizing their health. To learn more about our concierge services that we provide to our members, visit BrentwoodMD.com. We'd love to meet you. This podcast was for general information only and does not constitute the practice of medicine or giving of medical advice, as no doctor-patient relationship has been formed. The content of this podcast is not intended to substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Listeners should seek the advice of their own trusted medical professional.